KSJE and the Farmington Public Library present Quintos, Hanna, and Tales.
Hello, this is Lisa Vest with the Farmington Public Library. Today, I am going to be reading The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, The Witch, and The Wardrobe, based on the original book by C.S. Lewis and retold by Hywin Oram. Once there was, and probably still is, a magic wardrobe. It was made from the wood of a magic apple tree, and you could, if you would, climb through the back to another world, to a magical land called Narnia. But now that world was ruled by an icy white witch, whose wand could turn you to stone and whose power could be broken only with the help of 4 children. And of course, right here on this side of the wardrobe were 4 children. Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy, all of them longing for adventure. Lucy, the youngest and most longing, was first to push past the furry coats and find herself in a snowy wood under a street lamp where the witch's wickedness had made it always winter.
"Always winter and never Christmas, imagine that!" came a voice.
It was Mr. Tumnus, a fawn. He was working for the witch, even though he knew it was wrong.
"Good evening," he said, staring hard at Lucy. "You are a human child, are you not? Come through the Wild West woods?"
"No," said Lucy,
"through the wardrobe in the spare room."
"Wardrobe? Spare room? Never heard of them," said Mr. Tumnus.
"But someone like you is expected, and a toasty tea awaits you."
After tea, to Lucy's surprise, Mr. Tumnus began to weep so hard that there were puddles all over the floor. Lucy had often wanted to cry like that herself, and was most sympathetic, which made Mr. Tumnus blurt out the truth.
"I am supposed to hand you over to her wicked white majesty, but now that I've met you, I can't, I won't, even though I'll be turned to stone if I don't."
Lucy promised she wouldn't let that happen.
"After all," she said, "a witch is only a witch until someone stands up to her in the right way. So I'll get my brothers and sister, and that's what we'll do."
But before Lucy could persuade Peter and Susan, there was a wicked white witch through the wardrobe. Edmund secretly slipped through to see for himself and bumped straight into her. At once, the witch saw he was just the kind of boy she could win over with a box of her enchanted Turkish delight.
"And there will be lots more. Rooms full of it," she tempted him, "if you'll only bring your brother and sisters to my house."
I will, Edmund, stuffing and gobbling without stopping to think what might happen to them if he did.
"Then I'll make you a king."
That beautiful, wickeder-than-wicked witch smiled. So, when a few days later, all 4 children did go through the wardrobe together, Edmund was quite ready to deliver the others to the witch, just to get his mouth around more of that magic, must-have Turkish delight. Of course, he said nothing as they trudged through the snow in coats borrowed from the wardrobe. He said nothing when they found Mr. Tumnus's cave ransacked. He said not a word when a talking beaver told them Mr. Tumnus had been dragged away by the witch's secret wolf police. Lucy, on the other hand, was furious.
"Well, that does it," she cried. "I'm not leaving until that witch has had her wand smashed and her wickedness stamped on."
Mr. Beaver was thrilled to hear Lucy talk like this and hurried them back to his house for a what-to-do-about-the-witch meeting.
"You have come at exactly the right time," said Mrs. Beaver.
"You have indeed," said Mr. Beaver, "for it is well known that to get rid of the witch, Aslan needs 4 brave and adventurous children."
"Aslan?" cried Lucy with a shiver of excitement. "Who is Aslan?"
"Aslan the Great, of course," said Mr. Beaver, "who created this world and all of us in it. The only one more powerful than the witch."
"And," Mrs. Beaver gathered them closer, "they say he will be at the stone table by tomorrow."
But shh, the witch mustn't hear of it.
and her spies are everywhere. They were soon so busy whispering about meeting Aslan, they did not notice Edmund sneaking out the back to make his way to the witch's house and more Turkish delight. But nothing could have prepared him for what he found when he got there. Every kind of creature turned to stone. Air so cold it was frosted white. The witch's wolf captain stretched out smirking, and the witch in the foulest mood, hating him on sight.
"Where are your sisters and brother?" she snapped, her breath forming icicles.
"I'll get them to you," Edmund managed to say through chattering teeth. "Right now they're going to the stone to meet someone called
Aslan! I knew it! No wonder the temperature's rising in here! Longbeard, my sleigh! Aslan and those children must not reach each other!"
But, keeping to hidden paths and deep forest, the beavers were already leading Lucy, Peter, and Susan to meet Aslan.
"Sleigh bells!" cried Lucy suddenly. "Quick, hide! It might be her!"
"No, look," said Mr. Beaver. "It must be a sign from Aslan." Lucy looked, and her heart leaped. Father Christmas was here. He was not like any Father Christmas she'd ever heard of or seen, nor were his gifts. "I bring you what your adventures call for," he said mysteriously. Lucy held hers carefully. It was a small diamond bottle of cordial made from fire flowers, so magical that a few drops would heal the wounded. At the thought of the wounded, Lucy remembered Edmund. She had the feeling something terrible was happening to him, and it was. The witch had him tied like a prisoner, and was raging at him as if it was his fault her winter was wearing out. Her sledge wasn't working, and that everywhere there were signs of spring. But deep down, she knew it was Aslan's doing, and she knew the prophecy. "The day Aslan crowns 4 children kings and queens of Narnia, my rule will end." "Except it won't," she snarled at her lurking wolf captain. "I'll defeat him yet. Go out, go get at the other 3 while I decide how best to use this fool of a boy." But defeating Aslan would never be that simple, even for the White Witch. As Lucy and Peter and Susan were discovering at the table, Aslan was nobler than any creature imaginable. He was a lion, greater than all lions, and wonderful and terrible at the same time. For Lucy, looking at him felt like looking at the sun, only safer. When Aslan spoke, his deep, rich voice seemed to shake the very ground Lucy stood on.
"Welcome, children. Long have we waited for you."
He turned to the horizon.
"There, in that castle, are 4 thrones. Only when 4 human children occupy them will Narnia be free again. But crowns must be earned, and that time is upon you."
At this, there was great consternation among the smaller Narnians. Peter and the beavers ran to see what it was all about. But Lucy felt she had to tell Aslan about Edmund.
"He is lost, Aslan," she began, and then the words tumbled out. "Or with the witch, or taken by the witch, or something. But please, he is our brother, and he is the 4th. He must be saved."
"All shall be done that must be," said Aslan. "All dealt with in turn and first."
He was interrupted by the sound of the horn Father Christmas had given Susan. She was giving warning that the witch's wolf captain was slinking toward them. Lucy was up a tree in a flash, but Susan hadn't time to climb out of reach.
"Help her!"
Lucy screamed, and drawing his sword, Peter did, fighting that lurking, smirking, cruel captain single-handedly to his end.
"You are finding your strengths, I see," Aslan glowed, "and now I must send my people for your brother."
True to Aslan's promise, in the morning Edmund had been found. He was there, walking in the dewy grass and talking with the lion. Lucy thought her brother looked quite different, as if he was beginning to trust himself again. She was so relieved, she wanted to run over and throw her arms around him. But before she could, the dwarf Longbeard announced the arrival of the White Witch.
"Hear me!" the witch screamed at Aslan. "That child was ready to hand over his brother and sisters in exchange for a few boxes of Turkish delight. He is a traitor and cannot be rescued, for the law says all traitors are mine. Give him back to me now!"
When she had finished, Aslan sent Peter to prepare an army of good Narnians. Then he quietly offered his own life to save Edmund's. The witch couldn't believe her luck. "Forget Esmond," she whispered to her dwarf and her hags.
"Forget the children. Now I can kill the great Aslan, power of all good, without breath or roar, and rule forever. Tie him to the table with 1,000 ropes."
But as soon as Aslan was dead and the witch left, an army of mice arrived and began to nibble through the ropes. Lucy and Susan, who had been hidden, were heartbroken. They wanted to run and tell Peter, but before they could, there came a thunderous crack. The stone table had split in two, and Aslan was free.
"Aslan, you're alive!"
Lucy cried, flinging herself onto him.
"How did you do that?"
"Through magic deeper than the witch will ever know," said Aslan. "And now, children, there is much to do. But first, we shall enjoy a romp through spring as no one ever has, except in Narnia."
And that is what they did. The girls riding on the great lion's back through avenues and sunny glades, past roaring waterfalls and echoing caverns, across mountains, valleys, and acres of blue flowers. On and on, until they arrived at the witch's house. She was away, of course, but high walls and locked gates did not bother Aslan.
"Hold on!" he roared, and leaped, and landed in the courtyard, among statues of all the creatures the witch had turned to stone.
"Mr. Tumnus!" cried Lucy. "Oh, Aslan, I promised him I wouldn't let this happen!"
"Then keep your promise through me," said Aslan as he began to breathe warm life into each of the cold statues.
And, once back in the land of the living, all of them were only too eager to join in the battle against the witch. And her horrible army of ogres and giants, boggles and hags, ghouls and ghastlies of every sort. But as they came, bounding up, they saw stone statues of their side, all over the battlefield. The witch and her wand were winning. Then suddenly, Edmund stepped out to save the day. Instead of going for the witch directly, he brought his sword down on her wand, smashing it to pieces.
"Fools, all of you!" the witch screeched, turning on Peter. "I'll still find a way!"
Peter staggered back, and Aslan made his greatest leap yet, straight at the witch. And that was that. The White Witch is dead. Narnia is free. Long live Narnia! The cries went up, sending the last of the witch's army running for the faraway hills. As Edmund lay still on the ground, Lucy remembered her fireflower cordial and rushed to his side.
"He's badly wounded," said Peter. "But without what he did, the witch would have won." "True," said Aslan. "Even I might be a statue. He has earned his place back among you. But, Lucy, be quick. There are many wounded. Susan, help her while I get busy with all these statues."
When every hurt Narnian was healed and every stone statue was breathing again, Aslan solemnly crowned the children up at the castle. King Peter, Queen Susan, King Edmund, and Queen Lucy. Afterward, there was music, feasting, and dancing. Aslan, glowing more golden than ever, was about to slip away. But before he did, Lucy found him.
"We've never ruled anywhere before," she said, "and I am a bit afraid."
"Don't be," said Aslan, "for I'll be with you even when you do not see me. Besides, you're all brave and adventurous, and I've seen the love in your heart, Lucy, and it overflows. You will be as good a queen as Narnia could hope for."
As always, Aslan was right. Soon, all four of them were loved and respected up and down the land. Together, they finished off the witches' Gostleys. They restored peace, good living, and laughter. And where once it was endless winter, now it seemed always summer.
"The prophecy is fulfilled," said Mr. Tumnus as they walked in the wild woods. "Narnia is Narnia again! But what's this? An iron tree lit like a lamp?"
Of course it wasn't an iron tree at all. It was the lamppost near the wardrobe. Suddenly, Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy felt the pull of their lives on the other side. And the next thing, there they were, not pushing past trees, but rows of fur coats. They were back. They were home. And, to their amazement, not a moment had passed since they'd left. But then, as they were to find out in many other adventures, that was all part of the marvel and mystery of that ever more magical land, Narnia. And that was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, retold by Hywin Oram. The next book that I am going to be reading today is called Rumpelstiltskin by the Brothers Grimm and translated by Anthea Bell. Once upon a time, there was a poor miller who had a beautiful daughter. One day, the miller happened to meet the king and, wanting to impress him, boasted, "I have a daughter who can spin straw into gold." "I like the sound of that," said the king to the miller. "If your daughter is really as clever as you say, bring her to my castle tomorrow, and I'll put her to the test." When the girl arrived, the king took her into a room full of straw, gave her a bobbin and a spinning wheel, and said, "Now you must set to work. You can spin all night, but if you haven't spun this straw into gold by morning, you must die." And with these words, he locked the door of the room and left her alone inside. The poor miller's daughter was at her wit's end. She had no idea how to spin straw into gold, and she was so frightened that she began to cry. All of a sudden, the door opened, and in came a strange little man.
"Good evening, miller's daughter," he said. "Why are you crying so bitterly?"
"Oh, dear," said the girl. "I have to spin this straw into gold by morning, and I don't know how."
"What will you give me to spin it for you?" asked the little man.
"I'll give you my necklace," said the girl.
The little man took the necklace and sat down at the spinning wheel.
Whirr, 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 the wheel went around 3 times, and the bobbin was full.
He fitted another bobbin to the wheel. The wheel went whirr, whirr, whirr 3 times again, and the second bobbin was full. So he went on, and by morning all the straw had been spun, and all the bobbins held pure gold. At sunrise, the king came into the room. When he saw the gold, he was amazed and very pleased. But the sight of all that gold made him greedier than ever. He took the miller's daughter into a much larger room full of straw and told her that if she valued her life, she must spin all the straw into gold in a single night. Not knowing what to do, the poor girl burst into tears. Once again, the door opened, and there stood the little man.
"What will you give me to spin this straw into gold for you?" he asked.
"I'll give you the ring from my finger," said the girl.
The little man took the ring and set the spinning wheel whirring. By morning, he had spun all the straw into bright gold. The king was delighted when he set eyes on the gold, but he wanted still more. So he took the miller's daughter into an even bigger room full of straw.
"You must spin this straw into gold tonight, and if you do, I will marry you," he told her.
For though she's only a miller's daughter, he thought, I couldn't find a richer wife in the whole world. When the girl was alone, the little man appeared for the 3rd time.
"What will you give me to spin this straw into gold for you?" he asked.
"I have nothing left to give," replied the girl.
"Then promise me your first child when you are queen."
Well, the girl thought, who knows what may happen yet? As she could see no other way out, she promised the little man her first child. In return, he spun the straw into gold. In the morning, when the king came and found everything just as he had hoped, he married the girl. And so the miller's daughter became queen. A year later, she had a lovely little baby. She had quite forgotten about the little man. Then one day he suddenly appeared.
"Now give me what you promised," he demanded.
The queen was horrified. She promised the little man all the riches of the kingdom if only he would let her keep her child. But the little man said,
"No, I'd rather have a living creature than all the riches in the world."
Then the queen began to weep and wail so pitifully that the little man felt sorry for her.
"I'll give you 3 days' grace," he said. "If you can find out what my name is within that time, then you may keep your child."
The queen spent the whole night thinking of all the names she had ever heard, and she sent a messenger out to search the kingdom far and wide for more names. When the little man came the next day, she tried every name she knew, beginning with Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar. But each time the little man replied, "No, that's not my name." On the second day, she had inquiries made in the countryside near the castle to find out what the local people were called. And she tried some very strange and unusual names when the little man came.
"Is your name by any chance Skinny Ribs? Is your name Leg of Mutton? Maybe you're called Spindleshanks."
But every time he said, "No, that's not my name." On the third day, the messenger came back. "I didn't find a single new name," he said. "But when I was coming to a high mountain just as I reached the corner of the forest where fox and hare meet, I saw a little house with a burning fire outside, and a strange little man dancing in the firelight, hopping on one leg and crying,
'Today I brew, tomorrow I'll bake, and then the queen's sweet child I'll take. How glad I am she never will claim that Rumpelstiltskin is my name.'"
How happy the queen was to hear that. Not long after, the little man came in.
"Well, my lady queen, what's my name?" he said.
"Is your name Jack?" she asked.
"No."
"Is your name John?"
"No."
"Then is your name by any chance Rumpelstiltskin?"
"The devil told you that! The devil told you that!" cried the little man angrily. And he stamped his right foot so hard that he sank into the ground up to his waist. Then, in his rage, he seized his left foot in both hands and tore himself in two. And that was Rumpelstiltskin by the Grimm Brothers, as retold by Anthea Bell. This has been Lisa Best with the Farmington Public Library. I do hope that you will check out our website at www.infoway.org and check out our events page.
This has been Quintos Hanna and Tales, presented by the Farmington Public Library and KSJE 90.9 FM.